call the meeting on the Committee of Agriculture and Rural Economies to order. For the record, today is March 1st, 2012. And today we have Senate File 2061, Senator Magnus, going over the omnibus policy bill. And so at this time, Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Just a little background here. I would announce that our intentions with this bill is I would move the bill 2061, but at the end of the presentation, we'd move to lay it on the table. And is I think a good practice that we with these omnibus bills to bring them out, go through them, have the stakeholders in the community and the members sit down and look at them. That allows a majority caucus to get together and a minority caucus to get together and look at those two. And certainly in agriculture, we do what's good for agriculture, and so we're respectful of that. So that's my intention, Mr. Chairman, at the end of the day, that we would lay the bill on the table and have everyone a chance to look at it and have some period of time to do that, bring in suggestions. And also, we would be hearing bills. It's likely we'll be hearing bills as we go through the session here that we may want to include in the policy bill also. So we want to leave that option open, too. And I would say, too, our thoughts and prayers are out for Senator Kubley. For the folks in the audience, Senator Kubley is in a tough spot today, and he's in Regents Hospital and in critical condition, and it's not very good. So I would ask everyone to keep he and Pat, his wife Pat, in their prayers. Well, Mr. Chairman, what I'll do is just turn it over to the department. I have Greta Goth here with me and here and walk through the bill and have the testimony on the bill.
Thank you, Senator Magnus. Ms. Gothier, would you identify yourself, state your name and your position, and go forward with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Greta Gothier, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Thank you for having this bill before the committee today, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Magnus, for carrying this bill. This is our Department of Agriculture policy and tech bill. And if it's okay with you, Mr. Chairman, I'll just walk through section by section. Much of this bill was in legislation that came before the committee last year. Unfortunately, at the end of the day, the Department of Agriculture's policy bill did not make it through the session last year. But we're fine with that because we can be back here today, and we did get a budget last year, so we were very grateful for that. So, Mr. Chairman, if that's fine with you, I'll just start.
Thank you.
Then I do have staff here from the department that can answer any questions that may come up or provide more in-depth information for members. So sections 1 and 2, Mr. Chairman, deal with some reports that we produce. They are the Sustainable Ag Report and the Integrated Pest Management Report. And, Mr. Chairman, we're proposing that we no longer be required to produce those reports. A couple of reasons. One, all of that information is on the department's website and is maintained and updated very regularly there. And secondly, we do respond to requests from individuals for information on either one of those subjects at very frequent intervals. So we simply feel that the information is available in a new format that wasn't there when these reports were required, and we think that they're not necessary anymore, Mr. Chairman. That will also allow us some cost saving in our department. Sections 3 and 4 deal with the Department of Agriculture's responsibility for collecting waste pesticides, both ag and non-ag waste pesticides. The 1989 Groundwater Protection Law set forward that responsibility for us, and it stipulates that either we need to collect those pesticide wastes or we need to contract with a county to collect them for us. And simply what we're doing in Section 3 is saying that in addition to working with counties individually, We would also be authorized to work with counties that have formed a joint powers agreement for collection of household hazardous waste. The Association of Minnesota Counties did have a few words of comfort language there that they would like to add on page 3, line 28, and we will be bringing that forward on Tuesday in a small technical author's amendment. But they do support the intent of that section. The next section also has to do with our collection. And again, it's our goal to negotiate with as many counties as possible and have them collect our ag and non-ag waste pesticides as part of their household hazardous waste collection. And this language in Section 4 has been something that will provide a level of comfort to those counties for a very remote possibility that there may need to be some liability on their part. What this does is only indemnifies their employees under the State Tort Claims Act for the period of time between when they have finished collecting the waste and when they get to the final point of disposition or to another LGU.
Senator Squay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Gauthier. So are local units that are doing this going to object to taking on this additional risk, or what exactly is going on there?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Skoy, I have spoken with a representative of the Association of Minnesota Counties, and they have assured me that this would not be additional risk for them or cost. What it is the state basically indemnifying the county.
Oh, so the state, Mr. Chair.
But it.
Go ahead. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Gauthier. That is not the way I'm reading this. It's the state is not obligated to defend or indemnify.
What line are you
on? On page 4, line 22, subsection B. Maybe Mr. Knopf could clarify.
Well, that's only outside of the insurance.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Skoy, I think that's only outside of the county's liability insurance. The state's not, it says here, the state's not obligated to defend or indemnify an LGU under this subdivision to the extent of the local government unit's liability insurance. We're not.
Well, we can research this and make sure that it's doing what we want it to do here.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, I think what Ms. Gauthier is saying is that if the local unit of government has liability insurance that covers an incident, that the state would not need to indemnify that portion, but the state will indemnify anything beyond that or anything outside of that insurable part.
So, Mr. Knopf, it's not making any changes to what the counties currently are liable for.
No, as a matter of fact, Mr. Chair and Senator Skoy, what this does is it provides some protection for the counties that they wouldn't currently have.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, moving forward then to Section 5. This is Section 5 and its example of how our department, one of the many ways that we are being and working constantly to be responsive to the industry, to companies that come to us and make adjustments so that people can comply with the requirements of the statute. This pertains to a requirement made previously under law that sales of pesticides had to show that there had been a fee assessed. And the problem that came up was that some of the smaller dealers, mom-and-pop, if you will, type hardware stores, notified us that it would be a hardship for them and that they'd have to replace some of their hardware in order to comply with the specific type of invoice that would state for each specific sale the dollar amount that actually went to pay, in other words, computing the percentage on the total amount of the sale. And so if you look on page 5, page 8, lines 8 and 9 there, you'll see that what we're saying is that they can get an exemption from that requirement and instead put a basic stamp saying that the gross annual gross sales fee of 0.55% had been assessed and paid on the sale of that pesticide. So that for the smaller companies that didn't want to make the capital investment or couldn't make the capital investment in order to comply with the law, we'll give them an exemption and they can simply put that stamp on their invoices. Section 6, Mr. Chairman, is an update in the definition of infested. This is for purposes of our plant protection activities in the department, and you'll see that again in another spot coming up. Section 7 deals with our tree care registry. Mr. Chairman, this was something that was put in place several years ago to help us deal with invasive species like emerald ash borer. And as these species are kind of rolling across North America, having come into our country on the East Coast, it's our job and our goal to try to slow them down or stop them as much as possible. They're very damaging to our nursery industry and others. And there is a current law that says that if you're in a business and you have staff that work with tree trimming or are working on trees on a regular basis, that they have to, we have to know who those folks are, and we want to do this so that we can establish a line of communication and keep updated information going to those folks about the latest information on invasive pests like emerald ash borer. We needed to clarify it a little bit, though, so that the industry out there realizes that even if the company is not particularly a tree care company, if they are doing that as part of their regular work, for example, a power company has people that work with trees on a regular basis, we'd still like to know who those folks are so that we can make sure we get the right and most up-to-date information to them. Mr. Chairman, Section 8 on the next page there is a new requirement we want to comply with from some of our international trading partners. And what they're asking is that now we are, in addition to certifying the actual exports that are going out, that we also look at the processes through which some of these exports are treated. So we would be certifying in an export permit those types of things, like a kiln or a fumigation facility, that kind of thing. So that's to bring us into compliance with some new international requirements. Section 9 is a kind of a baseline provision we'd like to have in the law, saying that people should not be counterfeiting, altering, or using improperly their export permits. Again, there on Section 10, you'll see that updated definition of infested. And then moving on to Section 11 is actually something new this year that was not in last year's bill. And this is in response to a consumer complaint that's come to us from people who have bought flowering plants and fruiting flowering plants that are perennials and come home and plant them only to find out that the plants don't survive a Minnesota winter. And upon investigating this a little bit, it came to our attention that many of these plants are not labeled properly. They do not show what zones the plant can survive in or is bred to be surviving in, and also mislabeled in different ways. So what we would like to do is bring everybody involved in this area together and come up with some way to have something to identify to consumers that a plant will or will not, specifically will not be able to survive a Minnesota winter. And we would do this through rulemaking. This is not new rulemaking authority. However, we already have rulemaking authority for this, but we'd like to use rulemaking because, of course, Mr. Chairman, that is a great way to get everybody together, get everybody's input, and figure out the best way to move forward to solve this problem. The next provision, storage of nursery stock, that's also a carryover from last year, and also the labeling and advertising of nursery stock, Section 13. Again, you'll see another stipulation there about labeling some of the stock that's non-hardy for Minnesota winters. Then moving forward then, starting with Section 14, the way through to page 11, Section 28, 14 through 27, those are all pertaining to our reform of the grain statutes, Mr. Chairman. And just
Senator Scoy.
Well, I'll let her finish, and then I'll ask a question.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just very generally, what we're doing with the grain statutes is we are moving from three different types of grain license to one. We're reducing the reporting requirements from 12 reports a year to one. And then we are taking the enforcement portions of our grain statutes and putting them in one place so that it is easier for the public or interested parties to find them and to understand how to comply. And in so doing, by putting them all under Chapter 18, Mr. Chairman, we would also be authorizing the department the use of civil penalty in enforcing the grain statutes. We currently have criminal penalty authority and administrative law authority. This would kind of complete our package and give us the civil law authority as well. In our plant protection division, which handles grain and lots of other plant-related issues like exports and invasives, we already have civil penalty authority. It's just not, we just don't have that for the grain statute yet, and we would like to. And we can get much more detail about that as soon as I finish the walkthrough. But just to pause and show you, this is one spot where we've got a lot of language pertaining to the grain, and then there's another spot coming up as well.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Gauthier. If we're going to come back to this at the end, that'll be fine. But a specific question would be in Section 17 and 18 areas. It seems like quite an expansion of reasons for access and entry, and if you could at the end when you're talking about this area in more detail make sure you touch on the rationale for that expansion for access and entry.
And Senator Scoy, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Scoy, you also have some more information in your packet that will be helpful when you look at this, because we are making a lot of changes and reforming and repealing a lot of things that are obsolete. And that's in another packet here you have that will help you, the members, and that's why another reason why we wanted to sit and hold this for a while so you can look at some of this. And we also probably will have testimony here from Grain and Feed and others. So,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Magnus, Senator Scoy, just to also point out on Section 17 and 18 there, that language, grain, household goods, general merchandise, produce, that's already in statute. What we're doing is simply moving it into 18J. So it's just being moved from one place to another. It's not new. It's just underlined there because it's new to 18J.
So, Mr. Chair and Ms. Gauthier, it really isn't any expansion. It's just that it's all being put in one spot so you can read it easier.
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so continuing, Mr. Chairman, on page 11 at the bottom there, Section 28 on vegetable seeds and Section 29 on flower seeds. This is another instance where we are working with the industry to try to be flexible and allow variations to help people comply with the law. In both these cases, the current law says that the packets of seeds or vegetable or flower seeds are supposed to be labeled by net weight. We've had some folks say, well, we'd like to also or instead label the by the number of seeds. Some of the seeds are sometimes very, very tiny, and so net weight, it seems like you're not getting very much, but in reality there may be hundreds of seeds in that packet. So now under this language they can use either or, net weight or the number of seeds. Moving forward from that, Section 30 is an especially antiquated piece of statute, Mr. Chairman. If you notice on page 14, line 34 there, we're simply changing from chief chemist and assistants to the more modern terms of laboratory director, managers, and analysts. It's been a long time since we've had a chief chemist. Mr. Chairman, the last picture I saw was test tubes boiling over, and it was many, many years ago. So we're just simply updating the statute here to reflect the type of professionals that work in our labs today. The next section, 31, Mr. Chairman, has to do with our organic reports, organic agriculture reports. We're not eliminating that report, Mr. Chairman, but simply changing the time frame so that we can best take advantage of data from the United States Department of Agriculture. And again, a lot of that information is online, but we do have a lot of requests for this report, so we do still want to produce it. We just want to produce it in a more timely fashion. Then starting with Section 32 and all the way over to Section 36 on page 20, Mr. Chairman, that language is all the Dairy Research, Teaching, and Consumer Education Authority. And, Mr. Chairman, this is a provision brought to us by Minnesota Milk, and I believe that they may want to testify about it. If you want to do that right now, Mr. Chairman, we can, or we can wait till the end.
Would you like to testify now? Mr. Walling, welcome to the testimony here. Would you please state your name and your occupation for the record?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Kevin Walley. I represent the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. As Ms. Gauthier said, this is the provision that the Minnesota Milk Producers has developed as a framework for bringing together public and private interests to look into the future and to determine how to make our dairy industry more robust, provide opportunities for growth in the industry. A board would be established that would do some planning work to determine precisely what type of research would be most effective and how the product of the research undertaken in the private and public sector can be transmitted to our dairy producers in order to facilitate better production methods, better processing, and better consumer consumption of dairy products. It's been a long-term objective of the milk producers to establish this type of cooperative effort between the public and private sectors. And what we'd be doing with these provisions is launching that effort starting next year to at least establish what the parameters would be for research activities for the dairy industry. So that's our objective. Be happy to respond to specifics.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wally, does the dairy industry have a research and promotion council currently?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, indeed, there is a Midwest Dairy Council which receives money from a checkoff from the milk producers. And I know they support some research, but they're mainly in the promotion business. It would be our intention to engage those people in this effort as well.
And
Senator Skoy,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Wally, so the checkoff is going to that organization. Can you talk a little bit about the funding for this organization? Where is it going to come from, and what your expectations are there?
Okay. Mr. Wally.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, at this point there's no request for funding in this particular provision. The milk producers, I know, are interested in providing some financial support to launch this effort on their own. The other side of the coin is that we also need to talk to our private sector partners and measure their commitment and their interest in working in a cooperative fashion with the public sector on research efforts. And so my assessment of this would be is it's up to the milk producers and private sector partners to launch this effort to determine how, when, and where research would be undertaken. And if we come up with a plan that the legislature believes in, then we'd be coming back here and asking whether the state would be willing to partner with that effort.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Wall, how does this differ from the use efforts in dairy education and research, and that is, are we talking about competing, collaborating? What are we? What is this? How does this really work? And
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielash, we are certainly not talking about competing.
Yeah.
We have a University of Minnesota position on this board to right from the outset, mm-hmm. in order to ensure that whatever we dovetail with them. But the key component of this, I think, is to broaden the efforts and to include private sector investment as well. So that's where it'll differ. We hope to bring in more of the private sector commitment to growing the dairy sector.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up on that. But can't the private sector help invest in the ewes research currently? And I'm not sure if I'm missing the broader scope of the idea of the project. Is this something that maybe the ewes should be the lead on, with the private sector influencing what's going on, or collaborative with the private sector? I'm trying to figure out. It doesn't really have a direction that directly ties to the current research being done.
Well,
Mr. Wally.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielash, I think that it will. I think that it does. The university will be part of the process of determining how this dairy research, teaching, and consumer education authority will go forward. I don't see any duplication with what the university is doing now. As I said, as they come up with their ideas and their plans for facilitating research and determining what research facilities may be needed and where they would be most effectively located, that would be something that would have to come back through a legislative process if we were to seek any public funding to support that.
Just one last. Just to follow up on that. So you wouldn't expect it to be located at the St. Paul campus. You'd expect it, or it could be at one of the other university campuses, or on private, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mr. Wally.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielash, or at a separate location yet to be determined.
Okay. Thanks.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is your expectation that would there be an executive director or an administrative position along with this organization?
Mr. Wally?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, I think we make provision for that to be something that would occur, that's a possibility. I don't know that the initial planning. Yeah, there's an employee 34. Section 34 that calls for the board may hire an executive director.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to get my heads around the funding and how this is going to, function as a board. I'm certainly encouraging of producers getting together with the private partners to mm-hmm. do things for their industry. I've been very active in our commodity council that actually chaired it for a number of years. So I'm very supportive of what you're trying to do. I'm just trying to get my head around how it's going to function. So the growers, the producers are going to put some money in to get this thing started and to start the dialogue with the private sector, who's then going to see the rationale of the good ideas, put some money in, potentially hire an executive director, and then they will unify and come back to the legislature for funding for the research. And that kind of what you're anticipating?
Mr. Wally?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, I think what you describe is a scenario that could play out. I don't have a timeline for that, but the initial effort, I think, has to be sort of originate with the producers, with our private sector partners, and any request that we made from the public sector, I think, would ultimately be something that would be a matching amount to go along with private funding. That's the vision. So it wouldn't be a public sector carrying this on their own. If we don't have the commitment in the private side, this won't go much further than the planning stages.
And one final question, Mr. Chair. Is there an end date to this, or is it kind of goes on, or what's going on there?
Mr. Orley.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scott, I don't know that we have a sunset on this. I don't think that we do. If we wanted to have one, I suppose we could, that would be something we could consider adding. If at some point 3 years down the road or 5 years down the road we haven't launched, maybe it could go away. I don't know what the time frame is, so maybe that's something, if we're not going to act on the bill today, that we can talk with you about what that timeline should be.
Sure. And Mr. Chair, Mr. Wally, and maybe Senator Magnus, might be something you want to consider. I'm not thinking it would be a real short time, because this is going to take some time to mature and grow. But, mm-hmm. On the other hand, at some point maybe somebody should take a look at it and see if it's doing what it was intended to do.
Okay, that's good.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Wong, one of the things that, could you describe what hole in research or training or whatever this is attempting to fill that's not currently being delivered?
Mr. Wally.
Well, I'm not, Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielash, I'm not sure I can articulate that real clear. You're saying what gap exists now?
The need for this as opposed to what we're currently doing with the...
Oh.
At the U?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
Walking to the table, Mr. Raddatz, please identify your name and position and go forward.
Thank you. Chris Raddatz, Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau. And we actually served on the Department of Ag, had a task force looking at that. And one of the there is a lot of research being conducted in various states, but some of it's being conducted in the 60-stall stanchion barn, you know, kind of the way dairying was done maybe 20 years ago. And that's one of the efforts of this program, was to develop, number one, look at what's out there and not duplicate it, but then look at what is the dairy farmer going to need for the next 10 years. Because the research, some of the research is based on what we needed 10 years ago. So how can we build a facility that's going to be probably a little more relevant to the next 10 years of dairying and not depending on some of those older systems? Does that help?
Yeah, that makes sense. That's modernizing the facility or the techniques.
Just some added thoughts, Mr. Chairman, and these are great questions and something that we've talked about for quite some time, and we've seen this. Here's a scenario we've seen around the U.S. We've seen several universities drop their research programs. They've sold off their dairy herds. They've dropped this completely. That is not really what our envisioning here is with the University of Minnesota. There's a strong desire to maintain independent research from an independent body such as the university, and that's something that all of agriculture looks for, is not just individual companies promoting their products, but an independent research base and source that we can use. But we recognize that under this scenario now, agriculture's changed a lot, dairy farming is changing a lot. We need to partner with privates, the commodity groups, organizations, and the university to all partnership and develop a partnership and to create a stronger research program for the good of the dairy industry here in the state. That's what we're trying to do here. So I think it'll be a good step to take. I sure don't want to see us just do what some other states have done and basically just abandon it and go. We've got a strong dairy industry here, and we need to keep it strong if we can. So that's what we're trying to do here.
Mr. Wally, further?
Mr. Chairman, no, I have no further remarks. Thank you.
Any further questions for Mr. Wally? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Gauthier, would you go forward, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we are on page 20, section 37, Mr. Chairman. This is a section 37 and 38, our Board of Animal Health provisions. And, Mr. Chairman, what these will do is, again, help us be in better compliance with what some of our international trading partners have requested. These two provisions pertain to when the governor has created an emergency, an animal disease emergency in Minnesota. And at that time, then these quarantine zones in Section 37 and restrictions on movement out of the quarantine zones, those provisions would kick in once that gubernatorial declaration has been made. Currently, in the quarantine zones, it's limited to 3 miles. Mr. Chairman, in order to be in better compliance with European Union and other requirements, we'd like to make that boundary, if you will, be flexible to control the movement of livestock. And that also acknowledges, Mr. Chairman, that we know more now than we did when this law was put in place about some of these animal diseases and what the size of the quarantine area needs to be. And our European Union and other trading partners do look at that when they look at buying products out of Minnesota. So we want to make sure that we are as up-to-date as possible on that. Section 39 is another reporting change. This deals with the Ag Land Preservation
Sorry, just a quick question on 38 before you move on. You have struck livestock, and as far as the restricting movements, is don't we want to continue to? 21.3, can you explain that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Senator Kielash. If you look on the previous page in Section 37, we've now put that in subdivision. So we're making the livestock more of a flexible zone.
Thank you. I didn't miss that.
No problem.
Good question.
Good question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 39 is our ag land preservation report. We simply are making that biennial instead of annual. And then the next two sections, 40 and 41, deal with the Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation, or AGRI, program. That section 40 there would allow AGRI to consider cost share grants for the installation of biofuel blender pumps. And the second section is extending the sunset for AGRI from the end of the current fiscal year to the end of the fiscal year 14-15, which is June 30th, 2015. Section 42 through section 59 on page 31. Again, our numerous provisions dealing with our grain reform. Of those, I would just point out on page 29 that we are working with the Minnesota Grain and Feed Association to look at the scale ticket section there and bringing that statute up to date to acknowledge the more widespread use today of electronic ticketing when at that point. So we will have something in our technical author's amendment next week pertaining to that. Of this whole grain reform, I will say again that what we're seeking to do is streamline and also the pointing out that the existing statute requiring a bond of 50% of the amount being stored is still going to be a requirement, but now instead of requiring a report every month with that bond amount changing multiple times over the course of the year, which we're going to take the average of 12 months storage, for example, and apply the bond amount to that so that over the course of the year, the farmer will have better coverage. It's also a simpler system, it's easier to understand, and it's easier for us to enforce. And I have people who can talk more about that. And then Section 60 deals with firewood labeling. Again, another provision here looking at invasive species, particularly emerald ash borer. For those members who didn't know, we do have one more county now under quarantine for emerald ash borer, bringing our total to four. And those are Hennepin and Ramsey, and then Houston and now Winona counties are under quarantine for emerald ash borer. And since that number seems to be growing, we would like to look at the labeling of firewood. Currently, firewood has to be labeled with the name of the person who harvested it and their company and the weight and so on. And the current law says that if the firewood is moved more than 100 miles from the point of harvest, that it needs to be labeled as to the county of harvest. Well, Mr. Chairman, that law came about in 2007, and it has proven to be very difficult to enforce because when you get to the point of sale, it's hard to know how far that wood has traveled or where. For example, if you go down the road here to the Super America on Rice Street, pick up a load of firewood, we don't know where, if it was harvested in Winona County or Hennepin County or St. Louis County for that matter. So what we're saying is we would like to remove that 100-mile restriction and just say that firewood in Minnesota, in its labeling that already exists, needs to include a line that says what county the wood was harvested in, so that we can, number one, educate the public about the serious nature of these invasive species and help people be aware of it, and number two, we'll be able to better enforce the law and hopefully slow down the spread of emerald ash borer.
Senator Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Gothier, just a quick question on that, and the reason I bring it up is I was approached just this week by a gentleman who does sell firewood in Winona County. I think he's actually one of Senator Howe's constituents, but I offered to help out as much as I could. He's right on the border of Winona County and Olmsted County. And he lives in Winona County. A lot of his competitors are on the other side of the border in Olmsted County. And a lot of his customers live in Olmsted County. Now, is it correct to say that under this quarantine that he cannot take firewood from Winona County into Olmsted County? Is that correct?
Ms. Guthrie?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Miller, yes, the quarantine is already under place. However, if the quarantine statutes and rules are such that if he is willing to treat his wood with either kiln or fumigation, and there we have lists of approved methods for treatment, then he can move it outside of Winona County. But right now, otherwise, he cannot. That county has been quarantined since last summer initially, and I believe we just formally made that quarantine official.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Yep. And, Mr. Chairman, Section 61 is another provision from last year's statute, and this has to do with the burial of concrete and rebar being on-farm burial of concrete and rebar being exempt from a solid waste disposal permit. And this effective date pertains to an incident at which there was a large animal, number of animals that perished, and the need of a producer to deal with that situation efficiently and quickly.
Had a fire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, the rest of it is repealers, and you'll see in those repealers a lot of references to chapters 232, 233, 234, 35, and 36. Those are all the grain statutes. Again, we're trying to modernize that and move a lot of that those things into a more clear and concise format. And then the following section there, the sub B actually, is a number of rules that are also being repealed. And a couple of them are being moved into statute, like that labeling pertaining to the collection of in the wild and that sort of thing. But the majority of those are also being repealed.
And again, those are in another packet, have in your packet. So quite an extensive list we're doing, but.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer questions or bring more Department of Ag staff up who can provide more detail.
Any questions for Ms. Gauthier? Hearing none, are there other folks from the department or otherwise that would like to testify? If there anybody else would like to testify, please come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
There being no other testifiers, Senator Magnus.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, I would like to move that we place Senate File 2061, the Ag Omnibus Policy Bill, on the table. And again, our thoughts are, as we hear bills later on, we may possibly wish to include those. But again, it's been my practice through the years that we have when we have an omnibus bill, that we do have people have a chance to look at it and take some time to think it through, and so we wait for a while before we move those on. So that would be my desire, Mr. Chairman, to put Senate File 2061 on the table.
Senator Magnus is moving Senate File 2061 be put on the table. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would just make some additional announcements. I'm not sure that we will meet Tuesday or not. Watch your emails. We're working on some issues here that's taking time to get those worked out. I've been in contact with the minority members also, and we're working together in bipartisan fashion. But some things are taking some time. Likely we will meet Thursday, but Tuesday for now is questionable. So watch your emails and stay in touch.
Thank you, Senator Magnus. There being no other business to come before the Committee of Agriculture and Rural Economies, we will call the meeting adjourned.